C3 Radio aus dem Zentrum für internationale Entwicklung. Am 20. Mai 2021 hat ein Online-Seminar der ÖFSE zu diesem Thema stattgefunden. Skills for Green and Just Transitions – The Role of Vocational Education and Training for Sustainable Development. In der heutigen Ausgabe von C3 Radio berichten wir darüber. Es begrüßt Sie Jürgen Planck. Der Hintergrund zum Seminarthema: Lernen und berufliche Aus- und Weiterbildung wird gemeinhin als zentraler Faktor für die Etablierung eines nachhaltigen Zusammenlebens angesehen und ist somit auch ein Werkzeug im Kontext mit Entwicklungszusammenarbeit. Bei Berufsausbildungen geht es oft um die Vermittlung von technischen Fertigkeiten, die für eine umweltfreundliche Ökonomie notwendig sind. Ist das aber angesichts der bestehenden Klimakrise ausreichend? Zudem folgen Berufsausbildungen oft sozial wenig nachhaltigen Modellen von Arbeit und Wachstum. Parallel dazu gibt es im globalen Süden oft prekäre, informelle Arbeitsverhältnisse, die weit entfernt sind von fairen und nachhaltigen Ansätzen. Wie könnte also berufliche Aus- und Weiterbildung neu gedacht werden? Als Keynote-Speaker beim Online-Seminar waren zu diesen und ähnlichen Fragen Simon McGrath von der Universität Nottingham und Prisha Ramsarup von der Universität Witwatersrand dabei. Moderiert wurde das Seminar von ÖFSE-Forscherin Margarita Langzahler.
Our first keynote speaker is Prisha Ramsarup from the University of Witwatersrand in South Africa. She will be speaking on conceptual issues regarding skills for green and just transitions and what challenges arise from these for vocational education and training. And she will be doing this from a South African but also from a global point of view.
Margarita has asked me to share some of the research work that we have been doing in South Africa. I come, like she explained, from a postgraduate research center that researches the relationship between education and work. And we have been involved in a national green skills project in South Africa for the last almost 10 years now, which is a partnership project between three universities in South Africa that have been researching green skills learning pathways and all of the various issues around green skills.
Gleich zu Beginn macht Prisha Ramsarup klar.
So the key argument for this afternoon from me is that the education and training system response to environment and sustainability has been inadequate, ad hoc, fragmented, reactive and inefficient.
Es braucht, so Ramsarup, zu Wett eine stärkere theoretische Grundlage zur Frage, was ist eine grüne Ökonomie?
Now Wett, as we know, is located at the interface between work, civil society and the labor market. So it has an important transformative role to play in skills development as well as the development of livelihoods. VET has always looked at relationships between work and learning. This has been the foundation of how VET has operated. A focus on sustainability and researchers working with ideas of bringing sustainability into this relationship between work and learning are arguing strongly, and the work of Spores and other work like Simon and people that we're working with in the VET4 project, we're looking at is what's missing in that relationship between work and learning is living. And VET needs to really start to look at the nexus between living, working and learning and how that comes together in how we conceptualize sustainability within VET.
Diskussionen über grüne Ökonomie, so Ramsarup, reichten zwar bis in die 1970er Jahre zurück, wären aber oft nur ein Diskurs über Arbeitsplätze.
But the transition to a green economy is much broader and bigger than a jobs discourse. It is fundamentally about the environmental and social challenges that lie at the heart of our society. So when we look at the transition to a greener economy, we are talking about much bigger issues like decent work, well-being, social, economic and environmental justice. How do we look at issues of inclusion and power relation and justice in the change initiatives that we're actually supporting? When we look and conceptualize change initiatives, who's deciding what kind of transitions are needed? How are different groups involved in decision-making processes, who's benefiting from these change processes, and how are benefits distributed in change processes.
Grüne Ökonomie und grüne Jobs zu definieren sei schwierig, sagt Ramsarup und führt aus.
What we are seeing in the literature is that there are three types of green definitions that are starting to emerge. The first one is the social justice worker-centered definition, which makes green contingent on issues of decent work, job quality, addressing poverty, social issues, and it's the kind of center of the just transitions kind of discourse. Then the definition that's focused on renewable energy and energy efficiency and the transition to a low carbon economy that looks at green at the transition as this movement towards creating energy efficiency and cleaner energy usages. And then there's a what people are terming as the more broader environmental definition in how green is interpreted, and that is anything involving environmental protection and quality. What we found in the programs that we have researched is that often the greening work or the green skills components are conceptualized within very traditional conceptions of production and consumption. So we're talking about skills development for a particular job.
Die Wertschöpfungskette, in der die einzelnen Jobs eingebunden seien, würde sich dagegen oft nicht verändern, so Ramsarup. Sie berichtet über ihre Forschung in Südafrika.
In the work that we've been doing in South Africa, because it resonates with the South African occupational system, we've been working with the idea of core green jobs, where the job, the purpose and the processes are green. We've been looking at specialisms in existing occupations, and we've been working with traditional green jobs that won't emerge as a new specialization, but it's the integration. That's one kind of framing that some projects in South Africa have been utilizing to try to understand the greening of work. If you're talking about greening an occupation, what exactly are you talking about greening? The knowledge and the occupational roles, what's the field of knowledge required for this occupation? Are you talking about the materials that the person is working on or the materials the person's working with? Are we talking about the kinds of goods and services produced by that occupation? Are we talking about the tools and the machinery that's actually being used? So this was just to give you some indication of the kind of conceptual issues that you have to start to think through when you're thinking about a green skills educational initiative.
Dann skizziert Ramsarup Forschungsergebnisse und kommt auf ihr eingangs geäußertes Statement zurück.
Policies around green jobs and green economy targets need to work with skill policies. And what we've found, and the ILO research has shown that, as well as multiple other country-based research studies, there are huge gaps between environmental systems, green economy targets, and skill systems. We're not going to be able to transition to a greener economy without a co-evolution of educational systems and economic and political systems, together with environmental policy systems and a range. So that's one of the first things that we need to look at. We need to not just set green economy or these kind of targets or environmental policy targets. We need to look at the skill system in relation to that. What we have found in our research, and we've mapped this with the research in a project now that Simon and myself and colleagues in Uganda are involved in as well, is that largely learning pathways into green jobs, enterprise development, and sustainable job options at these kind of technical levels are unclear, ad hoc, and fragmented. We have found multiple TVET programs that focus, but when we try to trace where are these people going to move to from this job, where is this job going to link to? There's very little attention paid to both either educational progression or occupational progression. In order to develop learning pathways, you need both. You need an understanding of how the occupations also progress, and that's what's going to enable people to move.
Der Veränderungsprozess in Richtung Green Economy and Green Jobs ist als langfristiger Prozess zu sehen, sagt Ramsarup.
But what we have found in our research, it's been extremely important to work at employer level, sector level and system level. you need change. In order to drive change, you need the change at all three levels. So we're engaged in developing research tools to get data on the greening of work at all of these levels. Because you can work with employers, you work with sector organizations, work within sectors, and then you also need to move that into occupational and educational systems.
Und Ramsarup abschließend?
I think there's a lot of work that has happened and we've learned a lot in the last few years. And as we frame and reframe VET systems towards sustainability, we need to really think and frame a VET agenda, a sustainability agenda that is strong, deep and transformative, that moves beyond narrow approaches to sustainability. That a VET agenda that actually takes equity and environmental sustainability objectives into account. And that requires multiple things like a reframing of economy, moving beyond the productivist growth ideas that are central to VET.
I would like to introduce our second keynote speaker to us, Simon McGrath. He is a UNESCO chair in international education and development at the University of Nottingham and extraordinary professor at the University of Western Cape. He has worked for more than 25 years on the relationships between education and development, and he has advised many governments and international organizations. And Simon will talk to us more in depth about conceptual issues and reflections about vocational education and training and the orthodoxy as we know it.
In the title of the presentation, it says the VET orthodoxy. So for a German audience, I think it's important to say that whilst the Germanic approach, which we'll say simplistically for the moment, is around the dual system, whilst that is perhaps an international gold standard, in most of the South, it's the Anglophone model that has become dominant, which is rather strange. It neither works theoretically nor works in practice. Then when it comes to being coupled to development thinking, often it's being paired with outdated development theory and policy messages, in a sense, very much still linked into program thinking, into top-down development. And so these processes were failing already before we came too late, many of us, to realise the seriousness and urgency of the climate crisis. So we had an approach that wasn't working 10 years ago. It's become increasingly urgent for us to realise that it's not working. So what I want to start off with is being quite provocative. What I want to do, though, however, towards the end of the presentation, is to say, OK, it's one thing to imagine just transitions. As Prisha said, it's a long process. And one of the things we have to do is see about those steps forward. Mark Swilling has a term, radical incrementalism. We've got to move incrementally. We've got to move step by step. But we've got to try and think about what are those steps are actually helping to transform rather than just mitigate. And ultimately what we're trying to get is sustainable VET rather than VET for sustainable development. I want to then move on to kind of a bigger picture here. And the language I'm going to use here is provocative, deliberately provocative. I want to talk for a minute or two about vocational education training's complicity in unsustainable development. And I want to point to these three elements. I've used the term carbon capitalism. Others talk about fossil capitalism. The notion that, going back to a quote from David Orr, we built the Industrial Revolution on availability of resources like coal and then subsequently oil. We did this by extracting large amounts of natural resources in ways that we cannot sustain. And if you think of the classic vocational educational areas, mining was supported, motors were supported, metals were supported. The whole structure of classical vocational education training was built around the broader economy, understandably. When we go to the South, of course, it was part of a wider process of colonial extractivism. Resources were taken from the South and brought to the North, and the point of vocational education training was to facilitate that process. In parts of Africa where the climate was suitable for whites, then we had settler economies, as in South Africa, and large amounts of skilling of white working class, male, largely, workers. But in West Africa, where the climate wasn't conducive to settler economies, then there was more emphasis on local skills. The youth are often seen as a threat. Prisha and I were presenting in Uganda probably about 3 weeks ago now, and there's a presentation which talked about a youth time bomb. And I was struck, apart from the violence of the language, that this is not new language. Back 30 years ago, the Southern African Development Community had a conference at Victoria Falls entitled Diffusing the youth time bomb. If we go back almost 60 years into early years of independence in a number of African countries, we can go back to things like the report of the National Christian Council of Kenya, which set up a village polytechnic movement because they were worried that the youth were going to the city and that they would fall prey to all forms of immoral temptation and from the state view would be potential political problems. So we've had a long-term problem of placing vocational education and training in particular ways politically and, of course, of seeing it as for other people, of seeing it for people who were less able to do academic work, of it being highly gendered, highly racialised, highly class-based. As I say, it then combines in a toxic cocktail with a lot of top-down development.
Wettmodelle, die in England bereits versagt haben, seien in Länder des Südens exportiert worden, wo sie noch weniger sinnvoll gewesen wären, so McGrath. Die nachhaltigen Entwicklungsziele der UNO schreiben in Ziel 4 hochwertige Bildung und nachhaltiges Lernen für alle fest. Problematisch ist für McGrath Ziel Nummer 8. Ein Pro-Kopf-Wirtschaftswachstum entsprechend den nationalen Gegebenheiten und ein jährliches Wachstum des Bruttoinlandsprodukts in den am wenigsten entwickelten Ländern aufrechtzuerhalten.
What is being measured here is annual growth rate of real GDP per annum. So it's a good thing if GDP per annum is growing. Now, obviously you can reject a radical degrowth position, but to talk about unlimited growth is simply unacceptable if we're talking about sustainability. 8.2.1 repeats much of the language, annual growth rate of real GDP per employed person per annum. So a notion of a formal economy that simply isn't there in many of the countries that we're talking about. So I think we need to be thinking much more about what we're talking about. Is it meeting the challenge of skilling for just transitions as Preacher's set out before?
Wett habe meist Handwerksberufe im Blick, sagt McGrath. In Afrika seien aber die meisten Jobs im informellen Sektor der Wirtschaft angesiedelt, oft prekär und unfair, und die angenommene lineare Entwicklung von der Ausbildung bis zur Arbeit gäbe es oft nicht, so McGrath. Im Anschluss an die Keynote-Speeches gab es Arbeitsgruppen, in denen das Thema Vocational Education and Sustainable Development diskutiert wurde. An einer Podiumsdiskussion, die ebenfalls Teil des Seminars war, haben teilgenommen Franz Rauch von der Alpen-Adria-Universität Klagenfurt, der unter anderem zu Education for Sustainable Development forscht, Kenneth Barrientos von der UNIVOC, das ist die UNESCO-Organisation, die sich mit WET befasst, und Maud Seegers von der NGO Education for Development. Margarita Langthaler richtet ihre erste Frage an Kenneth Barrientos von der UNESCO. Die berichtet im ersten Teil ihrer Antwort von einer UNESCO-Studie.
Could you give us some insight into the state of VET globally in terms of contributing to green and just transitions? Are there any good examples or best practices, or what would you say are the main obstacles? And are there any major differences between the global south and the north in terms of challenges?
So we looked at about 155 INDCs, so the intended nationally determined contributions, as a sample. It's a sample group for the purpose of understanding the priorities and the extent of the planned engagement or participation of Tibet in implementing the plans of action. And here we specifically focus on the adaptation components, which, as we know, is premised on the concrete actions that countries are undertaking to change processes, practices, and structures that can reduce their vulnerability to the impacts of climate change that's happening now. When we say Tibet needs to integrate sustainability, we should start now because there are a lot of things happening and jobs are evolving. We have to be able to respond in a timely manner.
Und welche Herausforderungen sieht Kenneth Barrientos?
First bullet point, it's a common challenge. It's a lack of the knowledge and the skills at the government level in designing and assessing adaptation projects. And here we are looking at the abilities to create flagship initiatives that can influence critical changes in processes, practices, and structures that help countries reduce their vulnerability. Second to the list is another challenge that points on the need for the management and decision-making levels of companies to incorporate climate knowledge in business decisions or adopt strategies to apply concepts like circular approach, to stretch the lifetime of products, for example, through repairs or remanufacturing, or for example, the use of resources that reduce biodiversity loss. So this we can say much about the business sector and also the things that are serving as bottlenecks for them to respond. And this week, UNESCO organized an Education for Sustainable Development conference, and we launched the ESD 2030 roadmap to provide where we are learning from small and medium-sized enterprise working with multinational companies on food packaging solutions or closing the production loop that used to be linear to conserve resources and avoid waste. So these are just examples that even though we see a lot of issues still going on in the business sector and how they are responding to the whole demands of lowering their carbon emissions, there are good examples that we can take inspiration from.
In der Folge nennt Kenneth Barrientos Best-Practice-Beispiele aus Finnland, Jamaika und den Seychellen.
But in Finland, from the study, what we are seeing is that there's a momentum in making the interconnection and links. So climate change issues are included in education. Many school subjects are now dealing with sustainable development and climate change. And they're also addressing climate change in a cross-curricular theme. In addition, beyond the basic education level, climate change issues are included in upper secondary curricula. So I think this is another source of inspiration for us, and we can take a lot of good lessons from the Finnish experience. Another example we found was in Jamaica, where it also shows that they are currently engaged in reorienting Tibet to support SDGs. So there are different levels of appreciation and manners of integrating sustainability, and definitely we have to see the country context why they are choosing the way they're choosing to do this. But again, if we look at examples, we see something relevant in Seychelles. Many government and civil society partners in Seychelles are contributing to climate change education program, targeting schools, the general public, artists, professionals, so the whole creative industry. Although TVET's participation in this drive is not systematically reflected in the plans that are available, TVET institutions are already undertaking ground-level activities on climate change adaptation. Another example in Seychelles, they have been engaged in establishing a Blue Economy Research Institute. So this is, I think, under the auspices of the University of Seychelles. And this is one of the ways for which Seychelles is trying to focus on climate change related researches. And this is something they want to strengthen further moving forward.
Abschließend merkt Kenneth Barrientos von der UNESCO an.
Last but not the least, earlier Prisha talked about having different strategies for the blue economy and the green economy in South Africa. And I think this remark echoes what we are seeing as a pattern in many countries where making coherent policy is not always easy. So the study that we did also saw that with the government of South Africa playing a key role in building skills for national development, it has also recognized that there is a need to build the necessary institutional capacity for climate change response planning and implementation. And it has reflected this in the plans, and hopefully we can see some progress in implementation later on.
So Kenneth Barrientos von der UNESCO. Moderatorin Margarita Langzahl erreicht die folgende Frage aus dem Publikum an die Expertinnen weiter.
Shouldn't we also focus a lot on informal economy in the sense of creating livelihoods, sustainable sources of income for people with non-linear education participation, also for skills that are useful to create that kind of livelihood?
Dazu Maud Seegers von der NGO Education for Development.
For example, in Uganda, there is what is called an informal TVET system that is run by the Directorate for Industrial Training, focuses more on shorter skilling. This shorter skilling is officially recognized, and young people can go move quite easily between that shorter skilling and move back into longer term TVET programs. And the TVET programs even have modules or courses included that will also qualify them in that informal system, which is actually quite recognized by employers. So it is, from a system side, flexible and favorable, I think, to young people.
Abschließend stellt Simon McGrath die folgenden Fragen zu WET in den Raum.
So how does vocational education and training sustain people, communities, ecosystems? Is it tenable? Is it working with integrity, inclusiveness? Is it healthy as a system and for the people in it? And is it durable? Will it continue?
Das war C3 Radio. Heute über ein Online-Seminar vom 20. Mai 2021 zum Thema Skills for Green and Just Transitions – The Role of Vocational Education and Training for Sustainable Development. Abschließende Hinweise. Über alle Angebote im C3, wie etwa die C3-Bibliothek, informiert man sich auf www.zentrum3.at. Über die ÖFSE gibt es Informationen auf www.ofse.at. Wie die ÖFSE ist auch C3 Radio auf Facebook. Bitte folgen Sie uns. C3 Radio gibt es wieder in einem Monat und ständig als Podcast auf c3radio.podhost.de bzw. auf www.zentrum3.at. Auf Wiederhören sagt Jürgen Planck. C3 Radio aus dem Zentrum für internationale Entwicklung. Mit den Organisationen Baobab, Frauensolidarität, Mattersburger Kreis, ÖFSE und Paulo Freire Zentrum. Weitere Informationen und Podcast auf www.zentrum3.at.